from deep inside your radio.
That's about the last place you're going to hear classical music around here, is in those things. Because it's gone, you know? It's the old people's music. They're getting rid of it. And the fundraising is going up as a result. That's the news from the public radio front. You know, Beethoven can go sit in the green room with Louis Rukeyser in the public broadcasting green room. And ladies and gentlemen, cast your mind back as we celebrate, quotes, underline, italics, this weekend of holidays, major holidays in two of the three major faiths. Nah, they're more major faiths than that, but two of them. As we celebrate that, cast your mind back about a year, and as we celebrate, watch what's going on over there. Cast your mind back about a year early in the life of this administration, when we were told repeatedly and with, I think, general approval, at last, the grown-ups are in charge. Do you remember that? That was the line. The grown-ups are in charge. You know, the Clinton people, they were messy. They were kids. They ate pizza. They didn't wear ties. Remember that? These were the grown-ups. Come on. They knew what to do. They knew how to... They were men of affairs. So one of their first decisions, since their dedication, their commitment, more than anything else, was to not do whatever Clinton had done. If Clinton ate pizza, by golly, we're going to eat tacos. If Clinton didn't wear a tie, by golly, we're all going to wear ties. If Clinton got too involved in trying to put out a Middle East peace settlement, by golly, we were going to do nothing. So this is what the grown-ups brought us. Now, I'm not blaming, you know, obviously, there are no clean hands at the moment, but we're in the hands of the grown-ups now, ladies and gentlemen. And it seems to me our government can't quite decide what to do. We get involved, we get back up. You know, because this is so why do they have to do this right in the middle of our war? Sharon isn't really clear what to do. He's got Arafat surrounded, but everybody's telling him, don't kill him, don't arrest him, leave him alone, give him candles, give him food. So he doesn't know what to do. You know what he'd like to do. He said it. So the only person who seems to have a clear policy, clear kind of thing in mind, is Arafat. On the other hand, there may be other people who have a clear idea of what's in mind, because, as you know, ladies and gentlemen, there are those, and some of them are in the current administration, who believe that we have to go through a really bad war in the Middle East to get to what the Bible has promised us. So, my question is it the grown-ups are in charge, or the Armageddonists? Hello, welcome to the show.
There's a light overhead, in the sky overhead, and I'm with you now, in body and music and mind, and we're silent and still, everything's so out of control tonight. In a plane that's flying past at a speed that makes me cry. Have you left me now? It's trouble that won't let me lie. I'm awake all the time. You know where I stand, holding my just a gun. Turn and run. You call killers of innocence. Against us, there's no defense. Your flesh and your wickedness can't break our love. I won't give you up to silver was covered in dust and my shoes fall apart, but tumbleweed runs over my desert heart. Turn and run. You call killers of innocence. There's no defense. Your flesh and your wickedness will surely bring you down again. Now somehow we must stay afloat. We won't give in to the undertow. Some things you will never know, but you can't break our love. Coming down, but you can't break our love.
Won't have again, and I know the And there are times when I'm smiling, and yet I'm incomplete. The only thing I can tell you is some arrows going. Some arrows go in so deep, some arrows go, some arrows go in, some arrows go, some arrows go in deep, some arrows go.
And myths and illusionary schemes. Though now I'm much more grown up, I fear that I must own up to the fact that I'm in doubt of what the modern cynics shout of. They say it's spring, this feeling light as a feather. They say this thing, this magic we share together, came with the weather too. They say it's May that's made me daft as a daisy. It's May, they say, that gave the whole world this crazy, heavenly, hazy hue. I'm a lark on the wing, I'm the spark of a firefly's fling. Yet to me, this must be something more than a seasonal thing. Could it be spring? Those bells that I can hear ringing, it may be spring. But when the robin stops singing, you're what I'm clinging to. Though they say it's spring, it's you. If poets sing that when a heart's sympathetic, it's merely spring, then poets' plights are pathetic, though I'm poetic too. They say it's spring, for lovers there's where the lure is, that evil thing, for which September the cure is. This they are sure is true, though I know that it's so, that my fancy may turn in the spring with a right one in sight. One can find a perpetual thing. Did I need spring to bring the ring that you bought me? Though it was spring, that wondrous day that you caught me, darling, I thought we knew that it wasn't spring, 'twas you.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to still yet another edition of the show. They keep happening. I can't stop them. It's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, you know? I don't know. I hope you know. And in answer to your question, thank you very much. It opened Friday in New York and this Friday in L.A. and San Francisco. Thanks to the New York Times Arts and Leisure section and to Joan and to the people at Fox. You heard me right, for being so nice to me in New York. You would have heard more about the film if I'd gone on somebody's air and said something about Milton Berle. But I didn't. So I didn't take that deal. But more about the media, ladies and gentlemen. Speedy Gonzalez can't seem to escape the clutches of the Cartoon Network. The rapid rodent has been deemed an offensive ethnic stereotype of Mexicans and has been off the air since the Cartoon Network became the sole U.S. broadcaster of the Looney Tunes cartoons a couple years ago. That has fans of the spunky character kind of on the warpath. They want Speedy back on the airwaves. Hundreds of fans have engaged in an email campaign to resurrect Speedy Gonzalez, gathering on animation fan websites. Don't you people have better things to do with your time? To debate and organize, according to Virginia Cueto, an associate editor at Hispanic Online. She wrote an article about the controversy. Speedy Gonzalez has always been a very popular cartoon character, and cartoon fans are among the most diehard loyal fans around. Really? Huh. They just want him back, she said. And these aren't just non-Mexicans. A lot of these are Mexicans themselves. There evidently wasn't a problem with the Mexican caricatures at the beginning of Speedy's career. The first, or the 1955 animated short Speedy Gonzalez won an Academy Award. Hey, how about those Oscars, huh? Next time, Whoopi, if you're going to cover up Oscar, make sure he's got genitalia to cover up first. Otherwise, the joke doesn't. The outdated messages in cartoons like Speedy aren't appropriate in the 21st century, according to Cartoon Network spokeswoman Lori Goldberg. It hasn't been on the air for years because of its ethnic stereotype, she said. We have such a huge library, I think we intend to go with popular shows that aren't going to upset people. We're not about pushing the boundary. We're not HBO. Cartoon Network has edited out scenes from or simply refused to show animated movies with now questionable gags or behavior like smoking or drinking. Among the most taboo of Warner Brothers cartoons are the censored 11, which depict blacks as fat-lipped minstrels or cannibalistic savages. Most of the audience, of course, for cartoons is children, points out Los Angeles psychologist Robert Butterworth. These stereotypes are ingrained when we're young, and what do kids watch? Cartoons. I know the adults are saying, oh God, it's just Speedy Gonzalez, he says, but these are impressions that are put in very early and very hard to pull out. Okay. Oh, by the way, there is a place where Speedy Gonzalez can still be found on TV screens. Cartoon Network Latin America, where Speedy Gonzalez is hugely popular. Irony's dead, isn't it? After 9/11, irony's dead. Wasn't that irony? So is Apu next? Ooh. More media stories, ladies and gentlemen. They keep coming. Sorcerer's Apprentice-like. How's digital TV doing in Britain? ITV Digital has applied to be put into what they call in Britain administration, what we call Enronhood, i.e. bankruptcy. The move, widely expected after spiraling losses. What, you mean digital TV isn't a big hit in Britain either? It is operating at a loss, has been trying to cut the payments it owes to the Football League for the right to air soccer matches. The Football League rejected the proposal to cut payments. And while it's going into bankruptcy, it has a farewell gesture. They're going to sue Rupert Murdoch. That's right. ITV Digital alleges that Rupert Murdoch's news corporation was responsible for distributing the information that led to the creation of thousands of pirate decoding cards. Isn't News Corporation the same company whose chairman keeps going around saying piracy is a threat to all of us? It's a virus that must be stamped. Yes, he is. Stuart Preble, head of ITV Digital, said the company is preparing to join that legal action launched by Canal Plus, the French media group, against a British technology group that's 79% owned by News Corporation. We talked about that before. Canal Plus is suing News Corp for putting out the info that led to a bunch of pirate decoder cards. But, you know, if they're not sorry, somebody else is.
The apology of the week.
We're so sorry.
Only one apology this week. Well, sure, when the world is at either at prayer or at war, not a lot of time to apologize. Archbishop Eldon Curtis announced this week that he is apologizing for his written rebukes of two Roman Catholic parishioners who publicly criticized his decision to reassign a priest who had viewed internet child pornography. "I'm sorry my previous letter to you was interpreted as being demeaning or even insulting," Curtis wrote. "I never meant it to be such." This is, I don't know where this is. The 23... Well, I don't know. Anyway, he apologized. This child thing is going on. And it's resulting in apologies and what, $1 billion in payout so far? But who's counting, really? Now, ladies and gentlemen, as if nobody had read the New Yorker story a couple weeks ago about the hundreds of tons of stockpiled chemical and bioweapon materials being stored in Iraq, probably the most detailed account of the gassing of the Kurds by Iraq. Because if nobody was paying attention to that, comes this. Saddam Hussein appears to be preparing a bid to host the 2012 Summer Olympics. The Iraqi president already has invited bids for construction of a 100,000-seat Olympic stadium, which will serve as the foundation for a 300-acre Olympic sports city in Baghdad. A company based in Jordan has been soliciting bids from international contracting groups on behalf of the Iraqi Ministry of Education. Iraq sent only one athlete to the 96 games in Atlanta. He was a wrestler. The Iraqi soccer team competed in Sydney in 2000, but they tied with Saudi Arabia and the Saudis advanced. In the Sydney Paralympics, a competition for handicapped athletes that follows the Olympics, some Iraqi weightlifters were disqualified for using steroids. Iraq has won one medal, a bronze in weightlifting at the 1960 Games in Rome. Iraq does have a National Olympic Committee. No one there could be reached for comment. The committee is headed by Saddam's son, Oday. Oday is famous for unleashing violent rages against Iraq's national soccer team. When the team returned to Iraq after being eliminated from the 2000 Asian Cup, Oday imprisoned three players. He once had the entire team whipped on the feet after it lost a World Cup qualifying match. British industry sources confirmed several companies have been making inquiries about how to enter bids for the Baghdad Olympics. Specifications for the stadium say it should be built according to British standards, except with more vents for the gas. And comply with regulations of international sports federations governing soccer and track and field. Saddam's viewing comfort is paramount, the documents say. The seats are to be made of plastic, but the seats of the VIP platform and the first-class seats should be of very good quality. The special position for VIP seats must be separated from other parts by transparent partitions. Well, that's only fair. On the other hand, Britain's most senior general has secretly instructed regimental commanders to prepare for an invasion of Iraq this autumn. Well, it leaves plenty of time to build the stadium. General Sir Michael Walker, the chief of the general staff, placed the army on a war footing earlier this month when he addressed more than 30 senior officers in Warminster. It's a good place to put your commanders on war footing. Warminster. His speech to the cream of the officer corps warned them to prepare for a major offensive against Saddam Hussein later this year. All the officers are due to take command of armored infantry and artillery regiments in the next few weeks, the units that would spearhead the British contribution. These comments are the first unambiguous indication that defense chiefs are already formulating detailed plans to attack Iraq alongside us, U.S. One senior officer who was in the room said at the end of his speech, he told us to go away and make sure we were ready for war by the autumn. We were quite surprised. So, as I say, but that still leaves you plenty of time for rebuild. Well, you know, then the stadium would be part of the new Baghdad. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some tales of airport security that we'll get to shortly. A couple more items in the top of the news. Andrea Yates' husband, according to forensic psychiatrist Park Dietz, he was working on one side or another in the OJ trial, I forget which, but he was the prosecution star witness in the case against Andrea Yates, the woman who drowned her five children. He says the husband might have prevented the tragedy. He says the husband's insistence that his wife homeschool their children and that they live in a cramped bus and limiting her contact with friends and family were major contributors to her mental illness, as was exposing her to Michael Warnicki's cult teachings about Satan. Yeah, somebody on public radio did ask the question. It was Scott who said, what's the difference between her and Abraham? Got a lot of angry emails. Irony Dead Department? Fighting broke out among high school students watching an anti-violence play in Texas. The Port Arthur School District canceled the performance of an anti-violence play after fighting broke out among some of the 300 students watching it. Thomas Jefferson High School students presented Stop the Violence, a play about conflict resolution and the consequences of violence in the school auditorium. The performance was part of the school district's annual Peace Week. During the performance, one student assaulted another. Afterward, fights broke out on a large crowd of students filling the hallways and milling around outside. Who do you think they are? Soccer hooligans? We're planning activities over the spring semester, says Superintendent Lou Reed, to make sure it doesn't happen again. And a gunman apparently upset with the quality of widescreen television, just like me. No, he grabbed a lot of hostages earlier this month, in the tallest building in Amsterdam. The siege ended after 8 hours when he was shot. He entered the 35-story Rembrandt Tower, former headquarters for Philips Electronics. He said he was protesting the arrogant manipulation by the vendors of widescreen television and complained that consumers were being misled about the quality of the product. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, be grateful I have a radio show. And one more thing. If this ain't hot property, nothing is. The former Nixon home in Whittier is up for sale with an asking price of $725,000. Local preservationists and historians have mixed feelings about the possible sale. Some said it might mean the house will be removed to make way for commercial development. How about Nixon Burgers? You know, Nixon's brother, Don, was in a business called Nixon Burgers. I'm not kidding. This was the pretext for the Howard Hughes loan. Oh, come on. It's all old stuff. But the whole Howard Hughes involvement with Richard Nixon may have been part of what Nixon thought the Democrats were going to spring on him that led him to spy on them, bringing on Watergate. So it may have been Nixon Burgers goes straight to Watergate. Anyway, tear down the house and put up a new Nixon Burgers. Why not? Others see it as a chance to gain better control over preservation of the property if it's sold. A Whittier resident who has researched the history of the house said the sale would mean the home's demise is inevitable. No one is going to spend $725,000 to live in that small house. They're going to spend that to bulldoze it and put up a Kentucky Fried Chicken, he said. Or a Nixon Burger, Jeff. Owners Luis and Marie Dashwood purchased the property in 1975 for $80,000. They turned it into a successful antiques business for the past 25 years. A lot of interest in it. 1,400 square feet, 3 bedrooms, 1 bath on a 30,000-square-foot lot. It was the home of Nixon's mom. It was later given to her son and occupied by the future president, his wife, Pat, and their daughter, Trisha. It's a Spanish and English Tudor type house. A copy of the deed signed by Richard Nixon is posted on a closet door. Conservationists tried to get it on the local Register of Historic Resources, but the owners objected. They felt it would hinder the sale. City Councilman Greg Norbach said there wasn't enough historic documentation to put it on the list of historic houses. Well, what about the deed? Members of the Whittier Historical Society said there was plenty of documentation to prove Nixon lived at the home. He used it as his official address when he ran for Congress and the Senate, and he never lied when he ran for... His mom lived there. He lived there for about 6 months, and he made his first political speech in the driveway. What I would like to see, said the preservationist, what I would like to see is the driveway repaired. Okay. Don't set your goals too high. Ladies and gentlemen, last week, this is becoming a habit, I issued my own set of additions to the obituaries that have been written about Sylvester Pat Weaver. I left one out. He invented news on the hour on radio. That's right. Nobody had ever done that before. News was, you know, maybe today at 5. He was the guy who said, no, it should be on the hour every hour for 5 minutes. That was him. Anyway, so this week, you know that there were three, as the rule has it, three show business deaths. Billy Wilder, Milton Berle, and Dudley Moore. And the Dudley Moore obits, man, I saw an embarrassing one on CNN. Ah, unbelievable. But, you know, that's their problem. But, of course, the tributes to Dudley mentioned Arthur and Ten. Maybe some of them mentioned Bedazzled. But I grew up idolizing Dudley Moore. I got to meet him once. I don't think I got to say how very much I enjoyed his work. He was an amazing, amazing performer. One of the funniest people I'd ever seen. He started out in an amazing British comedy review called Beyond the Fringe, which many of you may have seen, with Peter Cook and Alan Bennett, and you're going to call me up and tell me who the fourth guy was. Jonathan Miller, I'm going to tell you. And then went on to amazing success with Peter Cook on British television. Some of you may have heard the comedy records. You'll hear some more of it today. Not only that, Dudley Moore, I don't know him well enough, didn't know him well enough to call him Dudley, was a remarkable musician. And so for much of the rest of the program, I'm going to share with you some of the music and comedy of the late Dudley Moore.
Thank you.
Dudley Moore.
Miss Rigby, Stella, my love, would you send in the next auditioner, please? Mr. Spigot, I believe it is. Mr. Spigot, please. Mr. Spigot?
Yes, Spigot, the name, Spigot by name, Spigot by nature. Oh,
good, yes, well, if you'd like to remain motionless for a moment. Mr. Spigot, you are auditioning, are you not, for the part of Tarzan?
Right.
Now, Mr. Spigot, I couldn't help noticing, almost at once, that you are a one-legged person.
You noticed that?
When you've been in the business as long as I have, Mr. Spigot, you get to notice these little things almost instinctively. Now, Mr. Spigot, you, a one-legged man, are applying for the role of Tarzan.
Right.
A role that traditionally involves the use of a two-legged actor.
True.
And yet you, a unidexter, are applying for the role.
Definitely.
A role for which two legs would seem to be the minimum requirement. Well, Mr. Spigot, need I point out to you where your deficiency lies as regards landing the role?
Yes, I think you ought to.
Need I say with overmuch emphasis that it is in the leg division that you are deficient?
The leg division.
The leg division, Mr. Spigot.
The leg division.
The leg division. You are deficient in it to the tune of one. Your right leg, I like. I like your right leg. It's a lovely leg for the role. That's what I said when I saw it come in. I said, lovely leg for the role. Lovely leg for the role. I've got nothing against your right leg. The trouble is, neither have you. You fall down on your left.
You mean it's inadequate?
It's inadequate, Mr. Spigot, and to my mind, at any rate, the British public is not yet ready for the sight of a one-legged ape man swinging through the jungly tendrils. However, don't despair, Mr. Spigot. After all, you score over a man with no legs at all. I mean, should a legless man come in here demanding the role, I should have no hesitation in saying, get out, run away.
So there's still a chance?
There is still a very good chance, Mr. Spigot. If we get no two-legged character actors in here within the next 18 months, there is every chance there is every chance that you, a uni-dexter, will be the very type of person we shall probably, in some way, be attempting at some time to contact telephonically. I'm sorry I can't be more definite, but you must understand what with all the difficulties of the B.O. Drosin
Who's up, Dad? Thanks very much, Pete.
Nothing like a nice cup of tea.
Nothing like a nice cup of tea, is there, Pete?
Nothing like it, Dad.
What's that you're reading, Pete?
Oh, this is a wonderful book, Dad. It's steeped in history and everything else. It's Burke's Peerages.
Burke's Peerages, what's that, Pete?
Well, it's a brilliant idea. It's a book which contains the names of the 20,000 most noble people in the realm.
Who'd want to read that, Pete?
Well, the 20,000 most noble people in the world, for a start. It's a superb idea. It all dates back to the 18th century, Dad, the age of reason, when, of course, the clever called reigned supreme.
Yeah.
And there was this Burke, you see.
What was his...
There was this Burke.
What was his name, Pete?
Burke. Burke was his name.
Burke?
He was Burke, yeah. A high-fluting Burke's, one of the great Sussex Burke's.
Yeah.
And he was wandering about in his palatial parkland, you see, Dad, on a fine 18th-century summer morning.
Yeah.
A lovely scene, as you can well imagine, the sun dappling through the trees.
Of course, one of his beautiful peacocks flaunting its exotic feathers in the sunlight.
Precisely. emitting the strange bird-like cry which sometimes comes from them. Very similar to the noise you just admitted. Right. And suddenly...
Play it cool, boy.
No, suddenly it come to him.
What come to him, the peacock?
No, this wonderful concept come to him. He thought, why don't I get hold of the names of the 20,000 most noble people in the realm and flog it for £2 a time? He made a fortune out of it.
Of course he did, Pete. I could do exactly the same thing, though, couldn't I? I could go up Barron Road and knock on every door, say, excuse me, Mrs. Taylor, I wonder if you'd give me your name and I'll put it in a book and flog it back to you.
You do very well, the Barron Road Gazette.
Yeah.
Could do very nicely with that sort of thing.
Of course you could. Clean up, boy.
Of course, the whole business of ancestry is extremely fascinating. I've been into my past, you know.
Really?
Yes, I've traced myself back at Somerset House. And do you know, in primordial times, my great-great-great-great-grandfather come over with the Druids.
What, the Druids of Lymington Crescent?
Yes, George and... George and Phoebe's ancestors.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's marvellous, isn't it? I had a bit of trouble. I went to Somerset House one morning. It was a nice morning. I thought, you know, go along to Somerset House.
Why not pop
you
down,
know,
yes.
Pop down and
have
a look at the birth certificate, you know. Makes a change, doesn't it?
Of course it does, Dad.
I went down there. I said to the gentleman behind the counter, can I have a look at my birth certificate?
Yeah.
And so he got it out, and I had a look, and it said, it had my mother's name down there, but where my father's name was supposed to be, there was nothing there. So, you know, I thought to myself, funny, you know. Mother's name here, father's name not there, you know, Fanny.
Mother, no father, birth
yeah.
certificate.
Exactly,
you
and
need the two
it.
Of them, Fanny.
Fanny,
yeah,
yes,
peculiar.
You see, very peculiar. So I taxed my mother on this point, but she was very evasive about it.
Well, it's probably a foggy evening, wasn't it, that
yeah.
day? But the wonderful thing about it, the ancestry business, is, you know, we've all got a bit of noble blood in our veins.
Yeah, it's the best place for it, isn't it, Pete?
Well, it's a wonderful place for blood, Dad.
Let's keep it that way, Pete.
Let's keep
yes.
it that way in this nuclear age when yeah. all the whole hydrogen hovers over us, us all. Exactly.
Exactly, Pete.
And do you know that we're all in line for succession to the throne?
Really?
Yes, if 48,200,701 people died, I'd be queen.
Where would I come in that, Pete?
I think 3/4 of the world has to pass away before you get it.
But, What would you do if you were Queen, Pete?
Well, I'd turn a job down. I wouldn't do it.
Really?
Too much like hard work, if
yeah.
you ask me.
No, I'd rather like it, you know. I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd give the MBE to Mrs. Woolley, and I'd give Aunt Dolly the Order of the Garter for services rendered to humanity.
Yeah. Your Aunt Dolly could do with a bit of decoration, couldn't she?
Yeah.
Thank you. This week, Studio 5 welcomes two distinguished visitors. We're very pleased to have with us this evening the newly appointed Lord Chamberlain. Now, Lord Cobbold, what are your views on censorship in the theatre?
Well, frankly, I think there's far too much sex and violence gets by in the name of entertainment. I mean, I go to the theatre to be taken out of myself. I don't want to see lust and rape and incest and sodomy. I can get all that at home.
We're especially privileged to have with us this evening His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Philip.
Good evening, sir.
Would you like to be seated?
This one here?
Either one.
Well, I'm used to sitting on the right.
Well.
Prince Philip.
We must interrupt for some tales of airport security, but that was Peter Cook and Dudley Moore from Beyond the Fringe. Bit went on to include somebody who wasn't Dudley Moore, so that's why we're here now. Why I'm here now. You know why you're there. Often imitated, seldom duplicated tales of airport security for you here on the show. Dear Harry, recently I made a round-trip flight from Pensacola to Orlando. I cleared all security from Pensacola to Orlando, but on the way back, the screener took my small 1.5-inch Swiss knife that was attached to my key ring. No big deal. The big deal was that when I returned, I found my 4-inch serrated blade knife in my carry-on bag. It had made it to and from Orlando without a hitch. Hi, Harry. A friend and I were going from Salt Lake City to San Diego during the Olympics on a Delta flight. Going through security, I was frisked, wanded, and patted down, asked to remove my boots, etc., while my handbag and carry-on waited, unattended, at the end of the X-ray belt, as usual. No one was paying much attention to it, except for me, because everyone's attention was focused on the guy attempting to get through security right behind me. He had multiple face piercings, ears, lips, nose, you name it. The nose ornament was particularly large. Of course, he was wearing a leather jacket adorned with all manner of studs and chains to complete the look. After removing his jacket, he still set off the alarm. At this, a bunch of security professionals showed up and discussed the situation quietly, delaying everyone else, of course. They collectively decided that he should remove all of the body ornaments, including the rather yucky nose bar. The guy somehow convinced them that it would take forever to do that, and it would be a tad messy, and that he couldn't really have a dangerous or explosive device tucked into his face, and they finally let him and the rest of us proceed. Me, I'm tad lucky. I'm tad messy. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, an airline has agreed to help in the most comprehensive study to date of the risks of deep vein thrombosis on long-haul flights. It is the first time an airline has been prepared to assist research into the controversial issue. That used to be called economy class syndrome until some people, at least one, died in first class of it. In what will be the largest investigation into the problem, British and South African specialists will look at 1,000 passengers flying between the two countries on South African Airways. Good flying to everyone. Thank you. Farewell to Dudley Moore. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network, on shortwave at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it around the world at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like not having to take all your piercings out if you could join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The C. Crane Company is proud to support Le Show, offering long-range radios, antennas, and more for over 25 years. The C. Crane Radio Light and Science Catalog is available online at ccradio.com or by calling 800-522-8863. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Hey, go see a good movie this week, why don't you? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.